Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Yeah, we have a Solartopia all over God's green world. That's Pete Seeger and David Burns with Darrell Williams singing the Solartopia song. Another hour ahead of us here to deal with the important issues of the world. I do want to say one thing very quickly about that terror in France. It's all about oil, folks. It's always been about oil. It's a horrible thing to see the terrorists running through the streets of Paris. Somehow the Western world thinks it's okay to bomb civilians, but not to have people running through doing it in person. This whole mess in the Middle East has been going on for way too long. The latest insanity stems directly from the invasion of Iraq in 2003. All this stuff. If you ask any expert on the Middle East about ISIS and where they came from, they'll all tell you it came from the invasion by George W. Bush of Iraq. It's a horrible, horrible tragedy. I also got to say, maybe we'll deal with this later in the show, that my first instance in any one of these terrorist attacks happens is that thank God they didn't hit a nuclear plant. And there are 58 of them in France, still 98 here in the United States. And one of these days, one of these crazy groups is going to go after a reactor, and then we're going to be in real trouble. So let's hope that doesn't happen. Let's get this mess cleaned up as best we can and as fast we can. I have two great guests today. One, Jim Warren, has been on with us once before, I think, a long time. Jim, you're with us.
Hi, Harvey. Nice to
meet you. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Thank you.
You're in North Carolina. And Kevin. Kevin Camps is a frequent go-to guy here on nuclear issues. Kevin, you're with us?
I am.
You are. Thank you to the crew in New York for getting us all together and for getting the three of us together here. Let's go through a glitch-free hour and talk about the issues of the world. I wanted to start with you, Jim Warren, in North Carolina. You have an amazing story to tell about an attempt to put in a solar facility and being assaulted by the utility company for trying to do that. Tell us the scenario. I read about it online. Couldn't quite fathom it. Can't quite begin to talk about it here. Tell us about this latest attempt to stop solar energy in North Carolina.
Okay. Well, a little bit of backdrop is that NC Warren and other nonprofits and the solar industry has been fighting Duke Energy and the Koch brothers for about a year as part of this national Koch brothers and monopoly utility effort to choke out the growing solar power industry. And so that was quite a fight on its own. During that period of time, NC Warren actually successfully installed or contracted to have installed a 5-kilowatt PV solar system on the Faith Community Church in Greensboro, North Carolina. They're a sister nonprofit that we've worked with on various fronts, an African-American community-based church. And
Wait, Jim, before you go ahead, tell us a little bit about NC Warren and what the nature of your organization is.
Yeah, well, NC Warren has been around 27 years. We're based in Durham now. We work statewide from the regulatory to the grassroots level and do a lot of watchdog work on Duke Energy and other utilities in the past, and I've appreciated working with Kevin and his folks over the years on a lot of projects. And so our top focus over the last 12 or 13 years has been climate change and basically wrestling Duke Energy toward a clean energy future. And so part of that is promoting renewables and energy efficiency, but part of it is watchdogging, exposing, and countering bad utility practices, and Duke Energy is one of those. They are the largest utility in the U.S., and in fact, they had claimed they're the largest corporate utility in the world. And they're headquartered in Charlotte, North Carolina. So we basically have been trying to wrestle them into the clean energy future. And so, yeah, they had joined up with the Koch brothers and some front groups to try to stifle pro-solar policies here. And especially to try to counter a bipartisan effort to bring about competition through third-party financing. We can come back and explain a little more about what that is. But basically, I can tell that story about through what we've done with the Faith Community Church. So during the course of this legislative fight over solar competition and extension of the solar tax credit, NC Warren did contract with the best rooftop solar company in the state, Yes Solar Solutions, and had them install a 5-kilowatt system on the Faith Community Church in an arrangement whereby NC Warren continues to own the equipment and the system, and we are selling, through a contract, a purchase agreement that we made with the church, we are selling the church the solar power at 5 cents kilowatt hour, which is less than half of what they pay Duke for the remainder of their electricity. And we did that and announced it in June with a ribbon-cutting ceremony. On the same day, we filed with the State Utilities Commission a legal brief asking them for a declaratory ruling, because it has been believed through the years that only Duke Energy can sell electricity to anyone else, you know, in the huge majority of the state, which is Duke's service area.
Are you saying that the law in North Carolina says that if you're in North Carolina, you can only buy your electricity from Duke Power?
Well, to clarify, there are in some of the rural areas, we have some electric membership cooperatives, as most states do. But Duke generates 95% of the electricity that's either sold directly in its monopoly service areas or is sold through those electric cooperatives. That's the thing in these monopoly states, which the official terminology is regulated states, but they are monopolies. And in about most of the country, let me say it this way, most of the country allows third-party companies, such as a solar company, to install a solar system on a customer's roof, residential, business, nonprofit, whatever, and sell them the electricity. And in fact, that so-called third-party financing arrangement has been critical to the growth of rooftop solar nationally. Over 70% of all the rooftop solar nationally has been financed that way, and because one of the beauties of it is it eliminates or greatly diminishes the upfront cost for the customer. But in about four states, it has been deemed either explicitly or implicitly unlawful for anybody other than the monopoly utility to sell electricity. So in those states, everybody has thought third-party financing cannot be done. Well, NC Warren and our allies found that we believe that the law is unclear and, in fact, allows at least a nonprofit to sell electricity to another nonprofit. And so we are clearly testing the regulators to press them to clarify the issue, and if they don't do it, we're hoping the courts will clarify that third-party financing should be allowed in North Carolina. It's something that in other states, it has taken some time at the courts to clarify that third-party financing is allowed.
Kevin Camps from Beyond Nuclear, have you encountered any other situations in any other states like this, as in North Carolina, where utilities have fought against solar being installed?
Well, I mean, the best example that comes immediately to mind, just because I have Davis Bessie on my mind so much, is First Energy. You know, its lobbyists gutted the efficiency and the renewable standards in Ohio. They're presently on hold. They're on pause. But there's other states, too. I mean, Oklahoma's made it difficult to install solar panels. Arizona, just incredible places to be doing this since, you know, Arizona's solar potential is some of the best in the world. So that we have, you know, dark ages policies being applied in that way is a real shame. It's why the United States is being left in the dust by countries like tiny Denmark with wind power, Germany with wind and solar PV. I mean, some good news is companies like First Solar in Toledo, you know, I make the commute between D.C. and the Great Lakes a lot, and I pass by that First Solar factory, and it is growing all the time. So what's really ironic is that they are exporting the solar panels that they're manufacturing in Toledo, Ohio, you know, probably internationally, I know across the country, but they're not being installed in Ohio very much because the policies of the current governor and legislature are so backward.
Yeah, this is amazing. So Jim Warren, I appreciate Kevin. Jim Warren, in North Carolina now, you have installed 5 kilowatts. Is that enough to power the entire church that you've put these panels on?
No, it's not, especially because the church is a real community asset, and they're just about night and day throughout the week operating. So a 5-kilowatt system would be appropriate for a good-sized home. But for a community-based church, it provides a part of their power, and we are hoping to add to that amount. But so it provides some saving to them, but the Reverend Nelson Johnson and the other folks at the church especially realized the great importance of us unlocking the North Carolina law and testing it and trying to get this very important element of the growth of solar power to be allowed in North Carolina. It's important to note also that, you know, we've heard as part of this attack on solar across the country, Kevin referred to Arizona and other places where this has played out too. Part of the utility industry's talking points is that solar is something that helps wealthier people, but it actually hurts poor people because it leaves them to have to pay for the power plants and the transmission systems. And it's a ridiculous argument that presupposes that we ought to continue having monopolies. In no other service or product area in the country do you have a situation where some customers choose cleaner or newer technology, and the company gets to raise prices on the other customers. But most importantly, the third-party financing solves any potential claim that solar hurts the poor because it makes solar more widely available across the economic spectrum, especially because of that no-money-down aspect of it. And
we all know how much the utility industry in this country really cares about poor people. I think the annual salary of the current head of First Energy is somewhere between $4 and $10 million a year. I mean, if they really wanted to care about poor people, they might want to divide up his salary, maybe give him a mere, say, $500,000 a year, and give the rest to the poor people. Deeply moved. I got to say, deeply moved by the concern of the utility industry for poor people in this country. So tell me now, what has happened, and I was stunned, what has happened now in how has Duke responded, not to your installing these solar panels, I assume, on the rooftop of this church in North Carolina?
Right, and in fact, people can see photos of the installation at ncwarn.org if they'd like to. Well,
that's W-A-R-N, N-C-W-A-R-N,
and
.org.
It was interesting when we first announced the installation in June with a big ribbon-cutting ceremony, got a lot of news attention. Duke rushed right on out after stalling for a long period of time. They rushed right on out and finally interconnected the system to the grid, which they were required to do, but they also immediately announced that they were going to challenge it at the Utilities Commission. They said they went ahead and hooked it up because they didn't want to inconvenience the church, and we appreciated that. But the Utilities Commission waited until the legislature got adjourned and realized that they had not passed third-party financing legislation. Duke and the Koch brothers beat it back, and it was a long-running fight over the bill. It was a Republican-led bill, a bipartisan supported bill, and we have big business, smaller business, the U.S. military, local governments, just about everybody in North Carolina supported the bill except Duke Energy and its cronies. And so when the legislature left without having dealt with it, the commission set forth a proceeding, a legal fight that's now underway. And at the beginning of that, a couple of weeks ago, Duke Energy called on the regulators to assess a $1,000 a day penalty against NC Warren since the June installation, saying that we knew that we had broken the law, and they sort of ignored the entire legal argument
that we have made.
And it's a penalty that at that point could exceed $120,000.
I realize I am allowed to use certain words on the air. So let me just say, these sons of bitches have installed your, they went ahead and they hooked you up, and then they went to court and went to the Utility Commission and asked for a $1,000 a day penalty for having installed these solar panels?
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, part of what we said at the time, and it's pretty clear that this is true, is that this is not only about the solar church project. Duke, you know, NC Warren has been tangling with Duke Energy, has been very critical about their activities for a long time, and especially about their business model, which is build big power plants, raise rates, and control state government to keep doing it. And so this was Duke's opportunity to try to silence us, because you can imagine with a lot of nonprofits, it wouldn't take but one funder or board member or even a staffer to be concerned and say, we've got to back off Duke Energy and quit being so critical toward them. And by the way, we try to emphasize we're critical about Duke Energy executives. They're the ones that make bad decisions. The rank and file, we have a lot in common with, and a lot of them agree with us that Duke ought to be leading a transition to clean energy in a time of climate crisis. But Duke's, they're bearing down and trying to shut us up.
All right, so let's review this here. You guys, NC Warren, made a deal with a church in what town in North Carolina?
In Greensboro, North Carolina.
Greensboro, which is, of course, a historic place for the first sit-ins and also for later a shooting. You negotiated with an African-American church. You worked a third-party financing deal. You got solar panels on their roof for no money down. And the solar panels, you are then being paid a rate, half the rate that they paid for the electricity from Duke Power.
Right.
And then Duke Power came out and hooked up the system as they're required to do by law, and now has turned around and gone to the Public Utilities Commission of North Carolina and asked them to fine you
$1,000 a day for having installed this system?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
You know.
Duke Energy, I mean, there are a lot of...
unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, we know there are a lot of big corporate bullies around the nation running the electricity system, but Duke is good at it.
And what is the name of the head of Duke Power?
The CEO now is Ms. Lynn Good.
Oh, they got a woman there.
Uh-huh.
And how much is she being paid a year?
I think she makes in the $7 or $8 million range.
Oh, so she's kind of just moderately paid.
She's only been in the job a little less than a couple of years, so they usually try to move her up. However, Duke is their stock is not doing too well, and partly, I mean, it relates to this whole broader discussion we've had. These utilities have been warned by their own trade association, the Edison Electric Institute, that those who don't evolve to meet the challenges of a growing market of distributed electricity and clean electricity, many of them are going to go the way of Kodak. And that's why Duke and others have been working with the Koch brothers to fight the growth of distributed solar energy. So
I just find it really hard to restrain myself when I hear this shit. I mean, really astounding. Kevin, you've encountered, Kevin Camps from Beyond Nuclear, have you encountered another situation where somebody is being sued for installing solar? Kevin, are you still there?
Oh, boy, nothing's coming immediately to mind. I mean, that's why this is so shocking, you know.
I've experienced
a lot of, you know, like I said before, the lobbying that's really undermining our democracy in a big way. But this is, you know, pretty vindictive, I would have to say.
Well, obviously they're trying to stop this. When was this suit filed, Jim Warren, to fine you guys? And I think they're fining you. Are they fining the church also?
No, they are seeking to have a penalty assessed against NC Warren only, and it was under 3 weeks ago. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Again, they're trying to silence us on several fronts. They're getting some pretty bad backlash. There's a lot of attention being drawn toward this.
Who is the suit filed with? It's filed with the Public Utilities Commission, or in the
it's not a suit per se, but it's a legal brief that in the docket that the commission established in order to deal with this test case over rooftop solar at the church and NC Warren. So the commission established a proceeding, and by the way, the importance of this is reflected by what we've been talking about, but also the fact that SolarCity and other large solar companies and a number of other faith-based entities have intervened and become parties in the case, and even the North Carolina Christian Coalition has written a letter of support for our position in the case. So we've got a lot of support across the political spectrum, and SolarCity and those folks are involved because they want to see more states open up and embrace third-party financing for rooftop solar. And we're hoping this backfires on Duke Energy.
Well, I know the Koch brothers. You have Elon Musk and Jesus on your side, so I would say that's a big plus.
Yeah.
But Jim, if you will make sure you send me whatever you can that's in writing about this, I will put a piece up on this about this up on PRN and other websites around the around the country. This is this this seems to me to be a test case for these guys to kill solar as best they possibly can. I mean, this is the first I've heard of anybody being sued for putting on a solar facility. What is their argument? What is their legal argument that would somehow give them the right to be compensated for your having put up a solar facility that they have since themselves hooked up?
Well, they're basically relying on what they say is clear-cut state law that prohibits this type of third-party arrangement. And, you know, we've made a strong legal argument that that they're wrong there. But, you know, the $120,000 penalty is so out of proportion to the, you know, several hundred dollars that they're losing in revenue from the church. And it was just sort of a ridiculous attempt to silence N.C. Warren. And by the way, we know that there have been slap lawsuits over the years against nonprofits that, you know, where polluters are trying to silence them. But this is quite different to try to penalize us in the regulatory arena.
Well, God, and so now you have had to hire lawyers, I assume, to defend yourselves. How are you doing this? How are you defending yourself?
Well, we do have an attorney. N.C. Warren has an excellent attorney, John Runkle, so we will be filing rebuttal comments, in fact, tomorrow in this case, and we are going to continue pressing the issue there. I think this case probably is going to go into the courts one way or the other, because if our side loses, we are certainly going to appeal, and if Duke Energy loses and the regulators tell them that they aren't the only ones that can sell electricity here, they're going to probably appeal it too, because you know this kind of financing could really undermine Duke's overall business plan. As I said earlier, their model relies on building big central power plants and raising rates to do it under a captive customer situation, so they are clearly trying to lock out competition. Let me mention real briefly, Harvey, if I might, because I'd love for your listeners to check this part of it out too. It relates directly to the solar issue and the Duke bullying we're talking about. But part of why Duke was trying to shut us up is because N.C. Warren led an effort a few weeks ago to seek to alter Duke Energy's corporate charter in North Carolina. And we've made a strong legal filing with the state attorney general calling on him to use his constitutional authority to police the corporation. And we're saying they are in violation of their charter, which is their permission to operate in the state. And that permission is granted by the people of the state through our elected officials. So there have been some of these types of cases around the country over the years, but this is a big opportunity for N.C. Warren and allies to try to rein in Duke Energy, and especially get them to try to help use their huge size and muscle to help slow climate change instead of making it worse by continuing to try to double down on fracking gas for their future. And, you know, they've still got nuclear on the table there, too. And we're calling on, and part of the call on the Attorney General is to require Duke Energy to stop blocking clean energy competition. And by the way, stop polluting our state government. So, I would encourage listeners again to look at ncwarren.org and look at this sort of not entirely unique, but an unusual, legal effort that's also being matched with a statewide campaign getting people to contact the Attorney General to support the call to rein in Duke Energy and make them work in the public interest, which is the sort of the foundational aspect of a operation in the state, that that they are supposed to operate in the public interest.
Well, that's a fascinating strategy. Now, I worked for many years with Richard Grossman, who was one of the experts in corporate charters and the whole history
of
that.
Uh-huh.
And the late, great Richard Grossman, who did spectacular work over many years. And I haven't heard, Kevin Camps, maybe you have, or anyone else, going to court to challenge the corporate charter of a utility. That's a great idea. Kevin, have you heard anybody else doing that?
I did think of some more vindictive stories about solar, though. Not this, what you're asking me now. It comes from Bruce Nuclear up in Canada, where we've been fighting this radioactive waste dump on the Great Lakes shoreline. And a Bruce Nuclear worker wanted to install solar panels on his own home and mentioned it to a coworker who mentioned it to another coworker, and eventually Bruce Nuclear management found out, and they pretty much told him, if you do that, then you can just find another job. So he was pressured to not put solar panels on his house. And a similar story from up there, a candidate for public office and a wind energy advocate up there tried to attend a meeting of local municipal leaders, mayors, and town councilors with Bruce Nuclear and the dump proponents, Ontario Power Generation, and was physically hauled out of the meeting and injured, actually, by being hauled out. And all of that secret meeting stuff is illegal in the province of Ontario. There's very little enforcement. So the vindictive nature certainly takes different forms.
Yeah.
It does, and there's a lot of it. Kevin, I'm going to talk to you. I know Jim has to jump off and get in with his legal filing here. So I'm going to let him go in a second, then you and I will talk about the nuclear waste situation in the Great Lakes, which is devastating. But Jim Warren, can we find out more about this this assault on the corporate charter of Duke from your website there? Is there anything else been written?
Oh, yeah. It's a pretty interesting case, and you're right, and I do want to lend credit to Richard Grossman, and attorney Lewis Pitts has been was one of his colleagues, and Lewis is actually in Greensboro now and had helped us with this strategy. It is an innovative kind of thing, or extraordinary, but we are living in extraordinary times, and we are working this to try to get the people of the U.S. to realize we have to really demand strong action to slow the climate crisis before we pass tipping points, which are quite imminent. And so it's a situation we're trying to turn the largest polluter in the country in a good direction. And, again, good news is that they're running into trouble trying to build a future on new nuclear power. Duke has still got a project underway there, but CEO Lynn Good a few weeks ago started signaling they're probably really not going to try to build those plants after they're watching those two projects in Georgia and South Carolina run into so much trouble. But I encourage folks to take a look at the challenge in the corporate charter. I mean, what's interesting is that, as I said, the authority is rooted in the state constitution, and then it's been affirmed by the state Supreme Court and by state and federal case law. So it's not something that we just made up, calling on the attorney general to challenge a corporation. But people across the country realize corporations, a lot of them, are just running amok. And Duke Energy has polluted our state government for too long and other states that they operate in. So we're taking an approach, and we think that Attorney General Roy Cooper will provide leadership. He has stood up to them before.
Well, Jim Warren, it's been an honor to have you on here. Amazingly important stuff. Quick question. Has Duke challenged people in North Carolina who put solar on their own homes?
Not directly, but they've done a lot of different things to try to make it harder and harder and to weaken the solar industry at the utility scale, the large solar farm scale, and at the rooftop scale. And they're driving everybody crazy by slow-walking projects, and they've been weakening and hurting people. our once growing solar industry in this state. So they've made a lot of enemies, and of course they have floated the notion of trying to put a tax on rooftop solar. That one of the parts of the Koch strategy across the country to try to put a monthly fee on systems that makes it less advantageous. So they've got a lot of tricks in the playbook, and meanwhile, they spend huge amounts of money year in, year out, greenwashing their corporate image and talking about how much they love solar. And as often the case, corporate PR and official actions are two different things.
Amazing. Well, great stuff, Jim Warren. Keep up your great work. NC Warren, I know, is a great organization. NCWARN.org. I'll be going there. I'll do a piece in a short period of time now about this amazing struggle for solar in North Carolina. Keep up your great work,
that.
And we'll let you go and talk to you again in the near future.
Harvey, thanks a lot for the opportunity to talk with you. And, Kevin, it's always good to hear your voice, and tell everybody hello up there.
Hey, right. Keep up the good work, Jim. You're doing great.
Thank
stuff.
You, too. Take care.
All right, thank you so much. This is Harvey Wasserman at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Thank you to New York for continuing with us now. We're going to stick with Kevin Camps, one of our more frequent guests here, because Kevin is so deep into and so knowledgeable on so many nuclear-related issues. I know, Kevin, you're focused mostly right now on the nuclear waste issue around the Great Lakes. Can you tell us what's going on with the dumpster fighting and what we need to know?
Yeah, well, the Canadian federal elections just took place on October 19th, and we've got some good news. Genghis Khan, Prime Minister Harper, was voted out of office, this anti-environmental zealot, who his people and he himself proposed a high-level radioactive waste dump on the shoreline of Lake Huron. So we're talking about the drinking water supply in the Great Lakes for 40 million people. And Ontario Power Generation put this proposal forward to bury all of Ontario's radioactive waste at the Bruce Nuclear Generating Station. Harper was all for it. The people he appointed to oversee the environmental assessment were all for it, despite our best efforts over the course of many years to stop this thing. And so the Joint Review Panel, as it's called, gave its blessing on May 6th. And the initial date for Harper's environment minister, an Indigenous woman, ironically, Leona Aglukak from Northern Ontario, I believe, to say yay or nay to this thing was supposed to be before the election. I think it was going to be September 1st. So for raw politics reasons, they postponed that decision until after the election, December 2nd, I believe. And the election took place, Harper lost, and the Liberals took power. So we've got an opening here. You can't say the Liberal Party of Canada is anti-nuclear, not by any stretch of the imagination, because the Liberals have ruled the province of Ontario for a long time, and Ontario is more nuclear than Illinois in this country. So we still have our work cut out for us. But just today, we sent a letter, this U.S.-Canadian Environmental Coalition, 66 groups, including groups like Greenpeace USA and Physicians for Social Responsibility, Sierra Club, and, 63 other groups in both countries, to the new environment minister, saying, nip this thing in the bud. And Dave Martin of Greenpeace Canada dubbed it the DUD. The company wants to call it the DGR, for Deep Geologic Repository, but Dave Martin named it the DUD for Deep Underground Dump. So our new slogan is nip the dud in the bud. We sent the letter today. It comes right on the heels of a bipartisan congressional letter to the Prime Minister Trudeau from 26 members of the U.S. House and 6 members of the U.S. Senate saying, nip the dud in the bud. They didn't use those words. But if you won't do that, then at least meet with us before you say yay or nay. And so there's been a lot happening. We're just so thankful. I mean, we've been fighting this thing for 15 years now to have some company in the fight, like the elected, state and federal legislators from Michigan finally waking up a couple years ago. So, we could be bitter about that, but mostly I'm just relieved and thankful that Rip Van Winkle has stirred, and let's hope it's not too little too late.
Well, it's amazing. Where do they want to put this dump?
Where do I want to put it?
No, where do they want to put it?
Where do they want to put it? Ontario Power Generation.
I know where you want to put it.
Yeah. You don't want to know. Not on the air. I don't think it's legal for me to say. But
no, it is, actually. This is not,
Ontario Power Generation, which owns all 20 reactors in Ontario, 8 of them right there at Bruce Nuclear, right across Lake Huron from Michigan's thumb, the tip of the thumb, you go straight east, you're at Bruce Nuclear Generating Station. Then there's 12 more reactors east of Toronto. That's Pickering, 8 there, and 4 at Darlington. That's 20 reactors in the province of Ontario, a lot of radioactive waste. They've been exporting Pickering and Darlington's waste to Bruce for 40 years. Nobody knew this in the United States until this dump reared its head, and we started looking into things, and they've been importing all this radioactive waste to the Bruce site for 40 years, incinerating the low level. So it's really the ashes they're talking about burying, and emissions from the incineration that we don't even know how bad they are. So what it is it's maximum convenience to Ontario Power Generation. They've been getting away with murder for 40 years by exporting this Toronto nuclear waste west to the U.S. border, essentially, and now they just want to bury it where it's been stored all this time. Canada is the second biggest landmass in the world after Russia. They have deep granite in the north, and I certainly do not wish this stuff on the indigenous peoples of northern Canada, not by any means, but this is limestone at Bruce Nuclear Generating Station. It's water-soluble. They say it's great geology. It's 450 million years old. It must be solid if it's that old. What they forget to mention is they're going to drill a shaft down from the surface to where they're going to bury these lateral caverns for the burial and the encapsulation, and then they're going to put a filler material, a sealant, in that shaft. They haven't even decided what yet or what design that'll be. That shaft is the weak spot. That's where, you know, gases can go up. That's where water can go down. They're going to stop actively pumping after 100 years or so, and then that dump is going to fill up, and it's going to overflow onto the surface of the land and carry radioactive particles and gases with it into the environment.
God, it's unbelievable. We're talking with Kevin Camps from Beyond Nuclear about the nuclear waste dump that the Canadian government wants to put on the in the Great Lakes, involving 20 reactors. It's absolutely insane. Now, aren't these reactors starting to shut, the Canadian reactors?
We do have some good news on that score from Pickering, especially, which is an 8-reactor complex just 20 miles to the east of Toronto. So, in a sense, it's one of the worst situations of its kind in the world, where, you know, Canada's biggest city is 20 miles to the west of 8 reactors. And so already 2 of those 8 are permanently closed. The other 6 are going to permanently close in 2019. It's similar to the U.S. with Fitzpatrick and Oyster Creek and Pilgrim, all these 2019 planned closure dates. So that'll be great news when Pickering shuts down. Unfortunately, at both Bruce and Darlington, they are either actively refurbishing, which means rebuilding the reactors from the inside out to try to get decades more, or they plan to do so. So we're fighting right now against the 13-year license extension at Darlington, which is unprecedented in Canada. They usually get 2-year extensions and have to come back through a licensing before the public again. They want to get 13 years, which will lock in this rebuild from the inside out.
Amazing. Now, on the other end of the Great Lakes, on the southern border of the Great Lakes, we have Davis Bessie near Toledo. One thing about this dump in Canada, are they looking to accept any American nuclear waste there, or is it all Canadian?
No, it's supposed to be for Ontario's so-called low and intermediate level radioactive waste. And intermediate is highly radioactive. And low is just a lesser concentration of the same stuff. So it's supposed to be Ontario-specific, where they're playing fast and loose, and there's no plans for taking American waste there. But what there is a plan for, only they won't admit it, is they're looking at high-level radioactive waste, not just from Ontario, but from across Canada. So now we're talking New Brunswick, we're talking Quebec. there are three communities near Bruce that have volunteered to be the national high-level radioactive waste dump for Canada. So they're doing a bait and switch. They're really making it up as they go. And it could be as simple as a one-day proceeding with, like, 5 minutes for public comment per group. And they could amend the license and say, okay, this low and intermediate, well, now you can dump high there, too.
Wow. So that means that they would put fuel rods over there. They'd move them off to the reactor sites and put them on this dump site, I guess, down in the caverns. Is that what they're talking about, putting fuel rods down in the caverns?
We think that that is a part of their scheme, if they could get away with it. They're saying that's not the case, but why would they build a multi-billion-dollar low and intermediate level dud and then just down the road build another one for high-level waste that probably is going to cost $100 billion, if Yucca Mountain is any indication? Why would you build two of these multi-billion-dollar dumps right down the road from each other for pretty much the same stuff? I mean, the intermediate level wastes are as highly radioactive as the irradiated nuclear fuel. So it makes no sense. There's no country in the world that's doing deep geologic disposal for low-level radioactive waste. So there's a lot of suspicious stuff with these proposals.
Well, I will say one thing, that putting high-level nuclear waste underground is beyond insane. Among other things, of course, the heat builds up, and you will have an explosion. That was one of the discussions about Yucca Mountain. These morons want to take a high-level radioactive waste, which continually generates heat, put it into a cavern, dug into a mountain, and completely ignoring the fact that this stuff generates a thermal pollution that will accumulate and blow the place up. We're talking with Kevin Campster from Beyond Nuclear. You know, whenever we discuss nuclear stuff, it's just hard to restrain myself from the pure idiocy of this industry. But Kevin, you are also dealing now with Davis Bessie, at Toledo, near Toledo, I think probably the most dangerous, decrepit reactor possibly in the world, certainly in the United States. Tell us about the most recent developments there.
Yeah, there's this incredible 1-2 punch happening right now. It's like we're caught in a vice or something. So what you got is the Nuclear Regulatory Commission poised to approve the 20-year license extension. We've been fighting it for 5 years. And, at the very same time, you've got the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio poised to grant First Energy a multi-billion-dollar ratepayer bailout, a lot of that money going to Davis Bessie to keep it operating, not to replace or repair the cracked, ever-worsening cracking of the shield building, which is concrete containment around the reactor, but to pad the pockets of the executives of First Energy and to pad the pockets of the shareholders of First Energy. That's where the multi-billions would go to at ratepayer expense. So it's just astounding cynicism going on.
It's amazing. And tell us a bit, if you can, about the deal that Davis Bessie, that First Energy is asking of the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio to keep this ridiculous reactor continuing to operate.
Well, it's interesting. It's a multifaceted proposal that First Energy has requested this bailout for. It's the Samoth coal plant. It's the OVEC coal plant that First Energy partially owns. And it's Davis Bessie. And to the best of my knowledge, the lion's share of this $3 billion nest egg complement the ratepayers would go to Davis Bessie because it's so expensive to operate. So what I'm really worried about is kind of a deal with the devil where First Energy agrees to let the coal plants go by the wayside in exchange for still a multi-billion dollar bailout of Davis Bessie.
Yeah, I mean, when they put this in front of the PUCO in Ohio, it's very clear they tacked on this 50-year-old coal plant to try and pacify the Sierra Club and other environmental organizations that are focused on coal and say, well, okay, you guys can have this little victory, which is bullshit, and we're not going to subsidize Samus, and we'll shut it down. Congratulations. What a great victory. And then, but they're going to continue to gouge the ratepayers to
keep this nuclear plant operating that would shut down in any marketplace in the world. It is crumbling. Kevin, you are the pioneer in showing how bad this thing is, literally falling apart, the Davis Bessie reactor. I'm terrified about it. I have a daughter in Cleveland. I mean, this is just every day these guys operate. Has got a gun to our head that where the trigger will go off without any human intervention whatsoever. I mean, this thing, if it was a car, you wouldn't drive it. If it was a house, you wouldn't live in it. I mean, it is just unbelievably decrepit. And, of course, First Energy is shielded from liability when it blows up or melts down or whatever else it's going to do. I mean, and so now they can't even operate it in the marketplace, and they're got this rigged little deal set up so that the public will have to pay for it. It's really infuriating. Kevin, what do you think the odds are that the PUCO is going to stiff the public now? Do you have any idea?
I'm not in the proceeding, and I should say, you know, I am really thankful to the Sierra Club Beyond Coal campaign because they've really taken it on, and I know they're focused on coal. They're not focused on nuclear power, but they've been in the proceedings. They've fought the good fight, and what I'm worried about is if First Energy makes a proposal and tries to get some of the other parties in the proceeding to agree to it, like, for example, Dynegy, another power company in Ohio, is a part of this Public Utilities Commission proceeding. And they're saying, no way, Jose. They're the competition with Davis Bessie, so they don't want to see any deal go down that unfairly benefits First Energy. But First Energy is lobbying not only the state legislature and also the governor, but, you know, the PUCO party as well. So they're desperate, and they will do what they can to keep Davis Bessie going forward.
That's outrageous, just horrifying. Are there any other similar proceedings going on? I know that in Massachusetts now, we have a concerted fight. The owner of the Pilgrim reactor, Entergy, has announced that they will shut by 2019, but that would involve two fuel cycles. They have one going now. The fuel, I understand that Pilgrim will run out in 2017. And there will be a fight then to see if they're going to reload. And I understand there's new legal opposition to that. Have you been following the Pilgrim case?
To an extent. I mean, some really exciting news is that State Senator Wolf in Massachusetts, along with a Republican partner, has introduced legislation that would tax Pilgrim, in a sense, to force them to remove the high-level radioactive waste from the, you know, catastrophically vulnerable storage pool at that Fukushima Twin Design to the tune of a pretty penny per fuel assembly if they refuse and keep the waste in the pool. The only reason it's in the pool is because Pilgrim Entergy doesn't want to spend the money on dry cast storage. They want to push that off into the future as far as they can, which is maximizing the risks in the pool. And so that's some of the more clear-headed legislation I've heard come out of a state legislature anywhere in the country on any issue. So we'll see how it goes. And that's the kind of pressure it's going to take to force Entergy to do the right thing, because as we're seeing around the country, they often are a rogue corporation.
Yes, well, all the nuclear operators are. And this is an interesting issue now. As we gratefully start to see these reactors close, not only at Pilgrim, but at Fitzgerald, Fitzpatrick, and Vermont Yankee, the owners, be it Entergy or whoever else, and of course it's San Onofre in California, are trying to really cheap out on the public in terms of dealing with the radioactive waste. Now, there's been a big fight at San Onofre over the quality of the dry casks, and at Pilgrim and elsewhere, they don't even want to take the fuel out of the pools. They want to, what they'll do, and we know what they'll do, is they'll close the reactors, they'll leave the fuel in the pools, and then they'll declare bankruptcy. They're setting up separate LLCs. The Entergy, which owns a lot of nukes, is trying to spit off the corporate ownership of these old nuclear plants and then not deal with the fuel and then declare bankruptcy or some other financial gamesmanship and stick the public with radioactive fuel rods that are still in spent fuel pools, which can't go on because you have to continue to power these fuel pools. You have to circulate the water. You got to protect them. Whereas if pulling them into dry cask storage, which is not great, at least is better. And of course, what they're finding at San Onofre is that the fuel, the dry casks that they want there are essentially made out of tin. And they, you know, they're very low quality. They've already had a problem with one at Diablo Canyon in California. And it's a nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, I just spent the last 2 days, and I'm actually still kind of on the fringes of this NRC gathering with industry all about dry cask storage. And you've got Holtec in the room, which is the company that's made the casks that you're referring to at San Onofre and at Vermont Yankee. And, you know, they are looking to make money, Holtec is, but they're looking to outcompete competition that has better casks by taking shortcuts. So we know from a whistleblower named Oscar Shirani at Exelon Commonwealth Edison out of Chicago that the quality assurance on the Holtec casks is non-existent. He led a team of 12 utilities, quality assurance inspectors, in the year 2000, and they documented 9 major categories of quality assurance violation with the Holtec casks, and that's never been rectified. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission has no QA program. They wouldn't know quality assurance if it bit them on the butt. They had just done a QA inspection of the Holtec cask manufacturing factory a couple months before Shirani's team got in there. They found nothing wrong. They gave them, you know, stellar grades. Shirani gave them an F and actually tried to get a stop work order from Exelon so they wouldn't install these casks and load them with radioactive waste. And he was rewarded for his good deed by being fired by Exelon and blacklisted from the industry. So that's some of what's going on. The state of Vermont is yet again leading the way. They are forcing Entergy to get the waste out of the pool in the nearer term, not near enough, but by 2020, Entergy has now agreed to empty the pool at Vermont Yankee, which is not a risk-free operation. But once it's done, like you said, it's going to be in a safer configuration, still not safe in the dry casks because these Holtec are of questionable structural integrity when they're sitting still. And NRC has certified them for train transport. So these things someday could be traveling down the railroads going 60 miles per hour or faster, and they're not even safe when they're sitting still going 0 miles per hour.
Oh, my God. You know, there's just no end to this. Kevin, that's why I have you back time again. Thank you. Your work on this is fantastic. And thank you, crew in New York, for sitting through another hour of nuclear turmoil and solar deprivation here. This has been the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show another week. And we will be back again next week with still more. Kevin Camp, Beyond Nuclear, thank you so much. We'll be back again another time.
Either way, thank you, Harvey.
We got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia?
So we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.
The fuel ran scarce, the price jumped high, and so they gave nuclear power a try. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world.
But the nuclear plants were built in haste, with too many risks and no place for waste. And so from Seabrook to Shoreham Town, we have to shut those new plants down. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.